Hello and welcome to Ox Talk for Tuesday the 6th of February 2024. My name is Guy and I've compiled the edition for this week. News items have been selected from local Oxford papers by Melini Ladd and Margaret Simpson and recorded at home by Stephen Harness and Melini Ladd. The USBs have been copied and distributed by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 7:36 a.m. and sunset is at 5:01 p.m. Before the news, we mark some events which happened on February the 6th in history. In 1935, the Monopoly board game went on sale for the first time. In 1952, Queen Elizabeth II ascended to the throne of the United Kingdom following the death of her father, King George VI. In 1958, seven Manchester United footballers died in a plane crash in thick snow on the runway at Munich Airport. The Busby Babes team, with an average age of 22, had been touted to dominate European football for the next few years. Manager Matt Busby was seriously injured but survived. In 1971, American astronaut Alan Shepard became the first person to play golf on the moon. During this mission, Apollo 14, he became the fifth and oldest person to walk on the lunar surface. Births on this day. In 1911, Ronald Reagan, former actor and 40th President of the United States from 1981 to 1989. Reagan was noted for his conservative republicanism, his fervent anti-communism, and his appealing personal style, characterized by a jaunty affability. In 1917, Zsa Zsa Gabor, Hungarian actress and socialite, who was as famous for her glamorous, sometimes scandalous personal life as she was for her television and film appearances. In 1945, Bob Marley, Jamaican musician considered one of the pioneers of the genre. His music fused elements of reggae, ska, and rocksteady, and he was renowned for his distinctive vocal and songwriting style. Marley's contribution to music irrefutably increased the visibility of Jamaican music worldwide and made him a global figure in popular culture. And deaths on this day. In 1685, King Charles II, King of Great Britain and Ireland from 1660 to 1685, who was restored to the throne after years of exile during the Puritan Commonwealth. The years of his reign are known in English history as the Restoration. In 1931, Motilal Nehru, a leader of the Indian independence movement, co-founder of the Swaraj Self-Rule Party, and the father of India's first Prime Minister, Jawaharlal Nehru. In 1993, Arthur Ashe, American tennis player. Ashe began to play tennis at the age of 7 in a neighborhood park. He won 3 Grand Slam titles in singles and 2 in doubles, and remains the only black man ever to win the singles titles at Wimbledon, the US Open, and the Australian Open. He retired from tennis in 1980. Now, on to the news. We hope you enjoy our selection of articles for this week.
New 20 miles per hour speed limits are to be introduced in 4 areas of Oxfordshire, despite concerns from opponents that the county will soon become like North Korea. County Highways Chief Andrew Gant held off on a decision to introduce the limits in Banbury due to partly to the town's 2 county councillors disagreeing on the matter. Recommendations to bring new 20 mph speed limits to Sutton Courtenay, Woodstock, Radley and the Grimsbury and Nethercote areas of Banbury were all agreed. An objector for the introduction of limits to the Radley area claimed that these had been the workings of a Marxist council and that Oxfordshire would soon become like North Korea. Mr. Gant responded, "I don't recognise that characterisation of Oxfordshire." The County Council's speed limit programme aims to roll out 20 mph in areas as a replacement for the 30 mph areas where there is local support. In cities research, which suggests individuals are 7 times more likely to survive if they are hit by a car driving at 20 miles per hour than if they are hit by one at 30 miles per hour. Strong reservations to the proposals were expressed by some residents in Banbury through a consultation with 247 of 649 respondents objecting. Banbury MP Victoria Prentice said she had reservations about the blanket rollout and that she had heard strong concerns from constituents on the matter. She was also surprised the consultation appeared to have been ignored given officials' recommendations for approval. Mr. Gant questioned use of the term blanket, but said, "I would very much prefer to proceed with a scheme like this with the full consent of elected members. We don't have it at the moment, and that's a concern." Criticism from the consultation was less frequent in areas besides Banbury, with 8 out of 14 respondents objecting to the policy in Sutton Courtenay. There was also 41 out of 219 objections in Woodstock, 2 out of 5 in Radley, and 43% of people voiced concern across the Grimsbury and Nethercote areas. Paul Bonsor, a member of local group of residents which would like to see the Banbury become a more pedestrian and cycle-friendly place, said, "It's just common sense. The 20 miles per hour limit reduces road deaths, accident rates and serious injuries. Who wouldn't want that?" A spokesman for Thamesbury Police said, "There should be no expectation that the police would be able to provide regular enforcement if a speed limit is set too low."
Patients in England can now get treatment for 7 common illnesses without needing to see a GP under a shake-up of pharmacy services the NHS has announced. From January the 31st, thousands of pharmacists in the country will be able to assess and treat patients who have a range of conditions from sore throats to infected insect bites without the need for a GP appointment or prescription. NHS England said more than 9 in 10 community pharmacies in England, 10,265 in total, will be offering the checks under the Pharmacy First scheme. Pharmacists are now able to assess and treat patients for sinusitis, sore throat, earache, infected insect bites, impetigo, shingles, and uncomplicated urinary tract infections in women under 65. The move is intended to give people more places to get the care they need, freeing up 10 million GP appointments a year. Amanda Pritchard, NHS Chief Executive, said, "GPs are already treating millions more people every month than before the pandemic. But with an ageing population and growing demand, we know the NHS needs to give people more choice and make accessing care as easy as possible." People across England rightly value the support they receive from their high street pharmacist, and with 8 in 10 living within a 20-minute walk of a pharmacy and twice as many pharmacies in areas of deprivation, they are the perfect spot to offer people convenient care for common conditions. Dr. Leila Hanbeck, Chief Executive of the Association of Independent Multiple Pharmacies, welcomed the move, but warned that pharmacies are severely underfunded to the tune of £1.2 billion now, and as a direct result of that, are reducing opening hours and even closing completely. She added, "This nonsense cannot go on, and this stranglehold of chronic underfunding must be relieved now to ensure our community pharmacies continue to exist and can deliver to the potential the government is expecting." Prime Minister Rishi Sunak commented, "Community pharmacies already do a tremendous job at treating minor conditions, and with the Pharmacy First service, backed by £645 million, we're determined to go further and unlock their full potential to deliver routine care. Patients who need treatment or prescription medication for common conditions, like an earache, will now be able to get it directly from a pharmacy without a GP appointment. This is about ensuring people get the treatment they need closer to home while crucially helping deliver on our plan to cut waiting lists by freeing up 10 million GP appointments a year so people get the care they need more quickly."
An Oxford pub has reopened after a major refurbishment. the Plough Inn in Cornmarket has reopened after new booths were installed. It first opened on the site in 1656, but the building has ceased to be a pub for many years. The building has many original features, including a grand staircase, a stone arch behind the bar, and original leaded windows. It now boasts a shuffleboard which can be hired at £10 for 55 minutes. The grand reopening party with live music will take place on February the 8th from 6 p.m. The pub will be showcasing its 14-inch deep pan sharing pizzas, as well as wider menu and drinks offer. Oxford has ranked in the top 25 cities for the most expensive parking, new data has revealed. Data from Parkopedia, which has been analysed by Cashfloat, has revealed which cities have the most expensive and cheapest parking. Oxford has taken spot number 23 with an average two-hour fare costing a driver £3.62. The data also revealed there are 31 places across the city to park and a total of 9,424 spaces. Among the places more expensive than Oxford are Manchester, Brighton and Hove, Liverpool, Edinburgh and Cambridge. It ranked behind London in first place.
It was the beating heart of one of Oxford's most deprived communities for more than 60 years. But diggers have now reduced the Blackbird Lees community centre to a pile of bricks and rubble. The demolition comes as Blackbird Lees undergoes a major redevelopment by Oxford City Council and developers Peabody. The construction of 294 new homes, retail space and a brand new community centre started this week. Linda Smith, Cabinet Member for Housing on the City Council, said there is a vision for a new district centre. But while she looks to the future, Lees residents have been recalling the community centre's cherished past. The building went up at the same time as the Blackbird Lees estate in the 1950s and 1960s. It helped to bind the new community by hosting wedding receptions, snooker clubs and pensioner parties. One former resident, Francis Knight, said, "We had our wedding reception there 58 years ago. What a shame it's being demolished, as it used to be the hub for the Blackbird Lees community." At its height, a social club ran in the building, had 1,500 members and a waiting list of many more. Pictures from the Oxford Mail Archive show children taking part in fun and games as far back as 1965. Claude Blackstock, who grew up in Blackbird Lees, said he had brilliant memories of the community centre. "Let's hope the new building will create fun and memories for the current generation in Blackbird Lees," he said. Barbie Mortimer added, "Lots of happy memories in there in the 70s. It's so sad to see it being demolished." Many residents have raised concerns that the community will suffer from the loss of the beloved building. Detailed plans have not been submitted for its replacement, but there are fears it will be a smaller design. Local Stephen Turner said, "Demolish a community centre because of costs and replace it with shops and flats, which are income generators. Yes, I can see where the inefficiencies are and what the council get out of it, but where will the community meet now?" The council approved the redevelopment in August after more than 4 years of engagement with the community. That included more than 1,500 pieces of feedback from residents and stakeholders in Blackbird Lees. Miss Smith said the previous community centre was at the end of its life and very inefficient. The Labour councillor said the new centre, along with the overall redevelopment, would be a big boost for residents of Blackbird Lees. The start of construction work on site is a major milestone in the long history of this project, she said.
Campaigners have hit out at the shamefully inadequate public consultation exercise mounted by the developers of Botley West Solar Farm, Photovolt Development Partners, PVDP, 10-week public consultation on the 1,000-hectare 2,471-acre facility on sites near Botley, Kidlington and Woodstock runs until February the 8th. In this second round of community consultation events, the public have been able to see a report on the environmental impact as well as the developers' updated proposals after Merton College pulled out its whole farm site in Begbroke from the plans last October. Professor Alex Rogers, chair of the Stop Botley West Community Group, said 75% of the proposed 3,400 acres development is on greenbelt land, mainly owned by the Blenheim Estate. This valuable natural resource for the residents of Oxfordshire and beyond would be industrialised for the 40-year life of the Botley West scheme, and may never be returned to agricultural use. This disproportionate, untested project would armour plate 11 miles of mainly productive arable green belt with 2,700,000 solar panels. Given the massive impact on people's lives and well-being, the recent consultation exercise was shamefully inadequate. It didn't even involve meetings in all the affected villages. Data from a survey by the developer Photovolt Development Partners, PVDP, shows that 80% of local residents are opposed to building a massive solar power station the size of Heathrow Airport in close proximity to 11,000 homes. Professor Rogers, the developer, must supply objective, independently verified answers to the challenges raised by concerned communities. This is particularly important for complex technical issues, including best and most versatile land use and claims about special circumstances to justify the scale of the development in Oxfordshire's Greenbelt, he said. The visualisations for the consultation process were misleading, and the developer's representatives had limited relevant knowledge, often referring questioners to experts who weren't at the consultation sessions. PVDP needs to restart the consultation process from scratch. He described the consultation process, which started in the run-up to Christmas, as triggering emotions ranging from concern and frustration to anger and tears. Much of the anger, he said, came from generalised claims by Mark Owen Lloyd, a paid spokesman for PVDP, about residents, communities and organisations who are appalled by the scale of the scheme. We are often wrongly categorised as putting self-interest above concerns for the next generation, for tackling the climate crisis and for protecting the planet. This is just not true. We are united by general fears this massive, untested, profit-driven technological experiment will destroy the local environment and heritage that the Churchill family has worked so hard to preserve for centuries. Oxfordshire is amongst the top UK counties in reducing energy consumption and adopting renewables. We recognise the climate crisis and embrace the need for decarbonisation and increased use of renewables. Our national renewables policy should combine the UK's ample wind resources with solar on wasteland, brownfield sites on roofs and in community-backed small-scale developments such as Charlbury. Oxfordshire is also the most important county in the South East region for farmland, countryside and associated wildlife. Given its scale, Botley West will damage many wildlife species with no serious mitigation being offered by PVDP, and the massive reduction in arable land will slow the UK's progress towards food security and resilience. Professor Rogers concluded, given the untested scale of the Botley West proposal, accountability to current and future generations is a critical strategic consideration. PVDP's business model is based on the future sale of solar power to generate profits for its owners and investors. It should be open about the timing of its exit strategy and how it promises about lack of intrusion, enhanced biodiversity and minimal land impact will be enforced in the future. After visiting a consultation session in Woodstock, Rupert Harrison, Conservative candidate for the new Woodstock and Bicester constituency, said, "The strength of local feeling against the proposals was very apparent from the conversations I had, especially the sheer scale of the plans. An industrial site bigger than Heathrow dropped into the middle of the Oxfordshire countryside. There are no examples anywhere in the world of a solar farm on this scale, so close to where so many people live, and for good reason. There are better ways to continue our investment in renewable energy, including smaller solar installations, rooftops, and building on the UK's huge success since 2010 in wind energy."
The time of year when we warm up our frying pans and start whisking is nearly upon us, as Pancake Day creeps closer and closer. Also known as Shrove Tuesday, the date of the day changes every year, but normally lands in February. Pancake Day always falls 47 days before Easter in April and is considered the final day of indulgence before the 40 days of Lent. Whether you like the traditional Brits' thin pancakes or prefer our friends across the pond who chose a thicker and fluffier pancake, you'll want to get the ingredients ready. This year, Pancake Day takes place on Tuesday the 13th of February, with Easter Sunday on March the 31st. If you're curious about the word Shrove, it derives from the Anglo-Saxon language and means a person has confessed their sins. The day is used as a traditional feast day before the start of Lent on Ash Wednesday. According to Historic UK, Lent, the 40 days leading up to Easter, was traditionally a time of fasting, and on Shrove Tuesday, Anglo-Saxon Christians went to confession and were shriven, absolved from their sins. In short, Shrove Tuesday was the last opportunity to use up eggs and fats before embarking on the Lenten fast, and pancakes were the perfect way of using these ingredients up. The traditional English pancake is very thin and is served immediately after frying, usually covered in golden syrup or lemon juice and caster sugar. Additionally, the tradition of tossing or flipping them is also very old. To quote Pascal Palin, 1619, "And every man and maid do take their turn and toss their pancakes up for fear they burn."
An Oxfordshire County Council app which allows residents to report problems such as potholes and faulty streetlights has been updated. The updates to the Fix My Street app were designed to reduce the number of reports sent to the wrong department or council, which can result in delayed responses. The app now has categories divided into subsections to aid users with navigation. Additional material and imagery have also been added for some sections to guide users in selecting the most appropriate category. Councillor Andrew Gant, Oxfordshire County Council Cabinet Member for Transport Management, said, "We are incredibly grateful to all the people who take the time and effort to report matters to us on Fix My Street. They are our eyes and ears around the county, alerting us to issues affecting their neighbourhoods, which have not been picked up by our highways team's routine inspections. Users may notice that we have made some tweaks to the system, which we hope will make it more straightforward for users and quicker for us and our partners at the city and district councils to deal with problems. An aerial map feature alongside the existing regular map has also been incorporated to ensure precise location reporting. Fix My Street can be accessed via Oxfordshire County Council's website." A dog has been removed from a man after he was caught hitting the animal and dragging it by the collar. Daniel Bailey, formerly of Kidlington, appeared at Oxford Magistrates Court on January 16, charged with one count of causing unnecessary suffering to a protected animal. The 42-year-old pleaded guilty to hitting the dog, a Staffordshire Bull Terrier called Bailey, and intentionally sitting on it. He would also drag the dog by its collar. He pleaded guilty on November the 13th. It was ordered the dog was removed from Bailey, now of no fixed abode, and he was banned from owning an animal for 5 years. He was also fined £200. There were court costs of £85 and a victim surcharge of £80. Anita Cross appeared in Oxford Magistrates Court on January the 15th after an application was made under the Animal Welfare Act to remove several animals from her. It was ordered that 7 dogs, 14 cats and 2 kittens be removed and administered treatment. Cross of Tilgarsley Road, Ensham, was also ordered to pay West Oxfordshire District Council £1,000 for the veterinary intervention costs.
The charity behind Cowley Road Carnival has announced the appointment of a new chairman. Roy McEwen, who has a passion for carnival arts, technology and entrepreneurship, is taking over the role at Cowley Road Works. Mr. McEwen brings to the organisation an extensive range of experience in roles within the carnival arts and entertainment sector. He has held positions including the chair of the Caribbean Music Association, the Notting Hill Carnival Trust, and was CEO of Making Carnival. Mr. McEwen said, "The Cowley Road Carnival is one of the most anticipated events that puts the people of Oxfordshire front and centre. Carnival provides a platform for artistic expression and a spectacular parade embodying the true essence of masquerade. Our stakeholders are keen to see the sustainable success of the carnival on the Cowley Road. I'm encouraged that 2024 provides an opportunity to return Cowley Road Carnival to the summer calendar and its contribution to the economic vitality of the Cowley Road community. His initiatives at Making Carnival include the conception of the first and only reality TV show dedicated to training and showcasing emerging carnival costume designers for the Notting Hill Carnival. Mr. McEwan's entrepreneurial skills were responsible for bringing Making Carnival to Sky Platform's Jam TV, enhancing the visibility of the carnival community. The event was called off last year after fundraising efforts failed to raise the £20,000 shortfall in funding. It is Oxfordshire's biggest free public event, but it's not taken place for more than 3 years. In the past, the event has seen up to 50,000 people filling the streets of East Oxford for a colourful procession, live music on multiple stages, and DJ performances. Mr. McEwan has shown a commitment to health and safety within the carnival community. He created Ondy Road, a health and safety guide for mobile sound systems. The Metropolitan Police endorsed the guide and the Greater London Authority referenced it during the cultural review of the Notting Hill Carnival. Pax Nindy, FRSA, the CEO of the charity, added, "Roy is a breath of fresh air in an organisation that struggled for the last 2 years. With his carnival and business knowledge, we're embarking on a brilliant journey with such strong leadership." The Cowley Road Carnival Board of Trustees and stakeholders eagerly anticipates Mr. McEwan's leadership as the organisation continues to engage and celebrate diverse communities via its annual carnival and year-round cultural engagement programmes. The Cowley Road Carnival has started planning and fundraising to make its return on July the 7th.
Thames Water was fined just £80 for allowing work to overrun, causing chaos on roads and leading to delays and missed appointments. A councillor described the sum as an insult. There was gridlock in Abingdon Town Centre and on routes coming into the town after the utility company's night-time work schedule continued into the rush hour. The company had agreed its workers would reopen the road by 5 a.m, but there were significant delays and it remained closed for the morning. Oxfordshire County Council, the Highways Authority, has confirmed that Thames Water has been fined £80 the following delay. A spokesman for the County Council said, "I can confirm that Thames Water was fined £80 for a breach of permit conditions. These fine limits are set by the Department of Transport." Nathan Lee, County Councillor for Abingdon North, described the signs of the fine as an insult. He added, "I'm grateful to council officers who rectified the situation on Tuesday. However, the size of the fine is clearly an insult to all of us held up, and the Department for Transport and Central Government should all allow much greater fines to be imposed. Thames Water treated the residents of Abingdon with contempt, and the moment there's little incentive for them to stop doing it again. Local people reported missing appointments at work as a result of the delays. Some pupils were late for school." Mr. Lee added, "I am still sorry for everyone who got stuck in it, as their fine won't make up for your loss of earnings or time. A personal lesson learned, check Google Maps for traffic every morning before heading out. The County Council has recently consulted on extra powers from government to charge more money when utility companies dig up major routes, lane rental. That should be coming up for a decision shortly, and I have no doubt will go through. But again, no consolation for people this week." A Thames Water spokesman said, "We are sorry for delays in reopening Sturt Street in Abingdon earlier this week. Our engineers began work on Monday evening to install a new connection to our clean water pipes. This was completed overnight, however, delay with the reinstatement of the road remaining closed longer than expected and impacting most motorists the following morning. The road was reopened on Tuesday in the afternoon. We apologise for the impact on the local community and will continue to liaise with the local authority on this matter."
An Oxfordshire mother is encouraging anyone experiencing struggles with mental health to utilise the NHS Talking Therapies service as part of a new campaign. The campaign, boosting awareness of talking therapies by showcasing affected individuals' stories, launches as new research shows that 51% of respondents in the South East were concerned about their mental health in 2023. Of these people, 32% did not seek professional help. However, of those who did, 64% said they saw an improvement in their mental health. NHS Talking Therapies offers free confidential support by trained professionals for anybody struggling with feelings of depression, excessive worry, social anxiety, post-traumatic stress, or obsessions and compulsions. Charlie Loudon, 32, who lives in Vale of White Horse, has shared how mental health struggles she experienced postpartum were transformed following a referral to Talking Therapies. Miss Loudon said, "After giving birth to my son, I noticed I was struggling to carry out day-to-day activities, having some side effects. I had sessions via video call with a therapist, although there is a non-video option too. This wasn't solely talking about the feelings I was experiencing. It was addressing how certain stimuli, such as in social situations, made you feel, and then identifying actions that could be taken to address that. I was able to take exercises and papers away as homework too. Once I finished my sessions and a subsequent review, I would implement tools I had learned into everyday life, confident in the knowledge that the service would still be there should I need it again. The service can be accessed by a GP referral or a self-referral via nhs.uk/talk for those aged 18 and over." Miss Loudon added, "My husband and friends have noticed a real change in me. We're very open with our experiences, and we naturally all encourage one another to take care of ourselves and reach out if necessary. Anyone can struggle without warning and through no fault of their own, and it's important people know how to access help available." Dr. Zoe Williams, a GP and media medic supporting the campaign, said, "People struggling with feelings of anxiety or depression need to know they shouldn't suffer in silence and that there is help available for them. The NHS Talking Therapies service offers free confidential advice by trained professionals, and you can be referred by a GP, such as myself, or you can refer yourself online if you prefer. If you are struggling with anxiety or depression, come forward for help. Ask your GP for a referral to NHS Talking Therapies or refer yourself online."
Former Oxford United player Stuart Gray has died at the age of 50. Gray, the son of former Leeds United and Scotland winger Eddie Gray, died at a hospice in Yorkshire after being diagnosed with cancer last year. The U said in a statement, "Everyone at Oxford United was saddened to learn of the death of our former winger Stuart Gray. The former Celtic player joined Oxford from Rushden and Diamonds in August 2005 to link up again with manager Brian Talbot. He made 11 appearances for the Ewes, with his final game coming in February 2006 before injury ended his professional career. Stuart had been bravely fighting cholangiocarcinoma, a very rare and highly aggressive form of cancer. Our thoughts are with his family and friends." Gray played 32 times for Celtic after coming through the club's youth ranks. He also played for Greenock Morton on loan, before going to play for Reading, Rushden and Diamonds and United. Celtic said in a statement, "Everyone at Celtic is deeply saddened by the news, and Stuart Gray had passed away after illness at the age of 50. The thoughts and prayers of everyone at Celtic Park are with Stuart's family and friends at this very sad time."
TV health guru Dr. Michael Mosley has revealed that by regularly eating a particular vegetable, you will begin to notice a positive change in your day-to-day life. It lowers your blood pressure, and studies have also shown that it can also transform your sex life. What vegetable is it? It's the beetroot. a superfood full of rich and nutritious nitrates that is said by Dr. Moseley to work wonders on the human body. The beetroot fits perfectly into Dr. Moseley's Mediterranean diet, of which he is a huge advocate. Made primarily of fruit and vegetables, he believes it is the best diet to follow for anyone looking to lose weight quickly while also staying healthy. An expert in his field, he is renowned for offering quick and easy weight loss and dietary suggestions that have proven popular with the British public. He told Science Focus, "When we consume nitrate-rich vegetables such as beetroot, something remarkable happens. Bacteria that live in our mouths turn the nitrate into nitrate. The nitrate, in turn, is changed by the body into nitric oxide, which, among other things, increases blood flow to various organs, including the penis. Adequate levels of nitric oxide are essential for producing and maintaining an erection, which may explain why the Romans used beetroot juice as an aphrodisiac. Although I haven't yet seen any clinical trials showing that consuming beetroot juice will have a Viagra-like effect, there is evidence that the expansion of blood vessels it causes results in other significant changes. The humble vegetable can be found across gardens and allotments all across Britain, regarded as a staple addition at the British tea table. As well as tasting amazing, it appears that the plump purple vegetable also provides excellent health benefits as well." Dr. Moseley recalled an experiment that he conducted on his BBC Two series, Trust Me, I'm a Doctor. He said, "We took a group of volunteers with raised blood pressure and asked them to feast on a diet rich in beetroot. After a few weeks, we found that munching a couple of beetroot a day led to a fall in average blood pressure of about 5 mmHg, which, if maintained, would translate into a reduction in their risk of stroke and heart attack of about 10%.
A health and social care provider is preparing to celebrate its 60th anniversary by inviting contributions for an exhibition at Kensington Palace this summer. The proposed exhibition, A History of Turning Points in 60 Objects, aims to display items put forth by those who have been supported by Turning Point or who have worked with it. The organisation assists more than 171,000 people annually in dealing with various issues spanning drug and alcohol misuse, mental health complications and learning disabilities by operating 283 services throughout the nation. Senior Operations Manager Andy Simmons said, "For almost a decade, Turning Point has been supporting people in Oxfordshire to recover from drug and alcohol issues. Our experienced staff combine their expertise with a compassionate approach to helping every single person that comes to our services." He encouraged those who have interacted with the organisation to put forward objects that reflect their stories. One such story is that of Pagan Watt, a 30-year-old who has been associated with Turning Point for 8 years and who has now managed to stay off ketamine for longer than a year. Sharing her experience, Miss Watt, now a peer mentor at the Oxfordshire Service, said she grew up in an environment where addiction was common. She admitted to using ketamine for over a decade, a habit that resulted in the loss of her daughter to adoption. She said, "Last year, whilst in hospital with sepsis, pneumonia and TB, I told staff to take her to rehab. I didn't want that lifestyle anymore. I wanted to be able to see my daughter." The Kensington Palace exhibition in June also extends an invitation to the public to participate in the Turning Point 60 campaign, echoing the theme of finding hope in the most unexpected of places. The organisation intends to use all participant stories in refining their services. The stories will also be shared with influencers and policymakers to promote societal improvement. Turning Point's chief executive, Julie Bass, said, "Turning Point's longevity speaks volumes for the level of service that every centre across the country provides to our clients. Turning Point launches services in Oxfordshire in 2015, after being established by London philanthropist Barry Richard as the Helping Hand organisation in 1964. An 89-year-old from Cassington Care Home recently enjoyed a day of paintballing. Sheila Woodley, who lives at Churchfield's care home, took part in the activity to fulfil her desire for adventure before her upcoming 90th birthday. The event was organised as part of the home's Magic Moment initiative, arranged by Faye Tanner, activities coordinator at Churchfield's. Ms. Woody said, "Doing activities like this make me feel young again. We had so much fun, but made such a mess that I felt terrible watching them clean it up. I love being mischievous and having fun with Faye. She's the one of the best people I know." Ms. Tanner added, "I think age shouldn't be a limit to anyone, and all our residents should be able to live their life to the full. It was amazing seeing Sheila having fun and relive her childhood," Sharon Rhodes, deputy home manager, said. "Our lifestyle team do the most amazing things for our residents."
A Wantage Cafe has created a new lunch group to address and help prevent social isolation in the Wantage and Grove communities. The club takes place at Down to Earth Cafe on the third Saturday of every month and is primarily for those who are of or past retirement age. The club provides a social space to cook and share a meal with others, thus addressing loneliness. The idea for the club came from both cafe owner Kate Farrington and Joe Harvey from community group Sustainable Wantage, who have previously collaborated on other projects. Miss Farrington, who also runs a weekly community cafe at the venue, helping to prevent isolation, said, "Social isolation has been a problem for some time now, but it was really highlighted during COVID lockdowns. Several people locally of retirement age live alone. It's something I've picked up on since running the cafe, as they may, for instance, have lost a partner. It's a difficult time of year for everybody, as people are less likely to get out and about when it's dark and cold. This club encourages individuals to get out and meet one another. At the lunch club, those who come along are taken to the kitchen, and using surplus food, we cook a delicious meal every time. We're open to ideas, so people are welcome to cook whatever they like, and we cater for those with intolerances or who are gluten-free and so forth." Ms. Harvey obtained a community capacity grant from the Oxfordshire Community Foundation, linked with the County Council, which made the lunch club a reality. Ms. Harvey said, "This is something we've really wanted to do for some time. I've worked with Kate many times and knew she could provide a cooking venue. This is a great project as it allows people to meet and make a meal together. They learn new skills, forge bonds, and can build friendships." The next lunch club will take place on Saturday, February the 17th. Forms for those wishing to join can be picked up from Down to Earth Cafe in Stirling Close or the Mix Community Space in Mill Street. Following the first lunch club this month, Miss Farrington added, "The first club went really, really well. Those who attended said they would be coming back, which I see as a huge positive. I encourage them to bring friends, as it's always good to spread the word. For the time being, the club is set to run until the end of the year, so there are 11 sessions left. People are always welcome to come back time and time again."
As energy prices and the cost of living soared, 2022 saw a record fall in the amount of gas people in Oxford used to fuel their homes, new figures show. Campaign group National Energy Action said households may reduce their energy use to dangerously low levels and called on the government to provide more support to the most vulnerable. Department for Energy Security and Net Zero figures show Oxford residents used 625 gigawatt hours of gas in 2022. This was a 10.5% fall on the year before, the largest decrease in domestic gas usage since comparable records began in 2006. In contrast, people living in Charwell District, which includes Kivington, Bicester and Banbury, used 580 gigawatt hours of gas in 2022. This was a 9.9% fall on the year before. The City of London, which has a very small residential population, was the only area in Great Britain that did not see a record drop in the amount of domestic gas used. Nationally, domestic gas use fell by 12.7% in 2022, also the highest decline in 16 years, which the Department of Energy Security and Net Zero report said This is likely related to elevated energy prices as well as the generally high cost of living. Peter Smith, Director of Policy at National Energy Action, said the record fall is very striking. He said some of the fall can be due to people reducing needless energy use, but warned it's likely that many of the 6.5 million households in the UK are having to cut their energy consumption to dangerously low levels. Mr. Smith added, "We are continuing to call on the UK government to provide more support to protect the most vulnerable people. We know millions of people are no longer getting the support they need to offset the worst ongoing impact of this energy crisis." Domestic electricity use also saw a record fall nationally, with the amount used in 2022 down by 8.2% on the previous year. In Oxford, 190 gigawatts of electricity was used by residents to power their homes. This was 6% down on 2021, and a record fall since comparable figures began in 2006. In Charwell, 256 gigawatts of electricity was used, 7.5% down on 2021. The Department for Energy Security and Net Zero said it recognises the cost of living challenges families are facing and is providing £104 billion worth of support with bills. A spokesman added, "Thanks to our warm home discount, 3 million low-income households are expected to benefit from £150 targeted support this winter. Our energy price guarantee remains in place to protect people until April this year, and we're continuing to help the most vulnerable, with 8 million households expected to receive a £900 cost of living payment, whilst those on disability benefits will get an extra £150.
Leading UK universities are employing research staff using fixed-term contracts similar to the gig economy, say the University and College Union, the UCU. Analysis indicates that two-thirds of research-only staff are on fixed-term contracts, a statistic which has remained largely unchanged in the past decade. Some universities, particularly within the Russell Group, display even higher tendencies, with 88% of Oxford University's research staff on such short-term contracts. Other Russell Group universities also showed a high percentage of research-only staff on fixed-term contracts, including King's College London and London School of Economics, both at 96%, and the University of Manchester at 80%. The UCU's General Secretary, Joe Grady, said the report exposes the widespread use of gig economy-style short-term contracts amongst university research department staff. According to the union's report, this type of employment can negatively affect staff's mental health and long-term decision-making. It warns of an endemic casualisation which can damage research culture, academic freedom and research integrity. The union analysed Higher Education Statistics Agency, HESA, data and sent Freedom of Information requests to 103 UK higher education institutions posing questions on the employment conditions of research-only staff. It scored institutions out of 100 based on their support for researchers in tackling insecure employment. The findings show that only 8 universities obtained a score above 50, with 39 achieving less than 30. Dr. Grady added, "This report shines a light on an area that universities would rather keep shrouded in darkness, namely the widespread use of gig economy-style short-term contracts for the staff who prop up university research departments. The poor scores across the board on areas like fixed-term contracts, proper redeployment processes, and decent redundancy provision speaks of a sector that urgently needs to update its attitudes to employment practices." She urged universities to commit to reducing fixed-term contracts and move their research staff to genuinely secure contracts. UCEA's chief executive, Raj Jethwa, said, "Higher education institutions use small numbers of flexible contracts for research staff, which are usually linked to external funding awards. the union proposed a more sustainable employment model for research staff, emphasising continuity of employment and minimising risks of redundancy at the end of funded research projects. It suggests universities need to collaborate with the UCU to introduce this new approach. Responding to the report, a spokesperson for the London School of Economics said it's working closely with the union on their proposals to reduce any unnecessary use of fixed-term and hourly paid roles. Similarly, an Oxford University representative acknowledged staff concerns about the use of short-term contracts, saying that a current university-wide pay and conditions review is examining these issues.
Hundreds of detentions of people with mental health issues were made in Oxfordshire in the year to March last year, new figures show. A mental health charity has called the figures a symptom of a broken mental health system. Under the Mental Health Act, people with a mental disorder can be detained, also known as being sectioned, if they are judged to be a danger to themselves or other people. Figures from the NHS show around 235 detentions were made in the former NHS Oxfordshire CCG area in the year to March 2023, or 33 for every 100,000 people in the area. This was down from the year before, when 550 detentions were made. Across England, there was a slight drop in mental health detentions. There were 51,300 in the year to March 2023. Compared to 53,300 the year before. Dr. Sarah Hughes, Chief Executive of Mind, said these numbers show that the mental health system is broken. Far too many people are still reaching crisis point before they get any support. The numbers also show just how deeply embedded racial injustice is in our society. While some improvement has been made, black people are still less likely to get support for their mental health when they start first to show struggle, and far more likely to be detained and subject to excessive restrictions. Oxford City claimed 3 points at home to Ebbsfleet United, but remain bottom of the Vanarama National League. Andre Burley scored the only goal of the game with 9 minutes to go in the first half. A Hoops corner was cleared to the edge of the penalty area, with Naya Kirby's back ball into the box flicked on by Reese Fleet to Burley, who beat the offside trap and finished past Mark Cousins. In the second half, Aaron Williams Bushell made an important goal on the goal line to deny Dominic Samuel's header at the far post. The visitors also crashed the crossbar via Luke O'Neill's free kick after Dominic Polan was fouled on the edge of the penalty box. The Hoops remain bottom of the National League, 3 points adrift of safety. Banbury United also secured a crucial 3 points in winning 1-0 at home to Scarborough Athletic. Lawson Darth netted shortly before the half-hour mark, tapping home from close range after a low cross from Oxford United low knee Aidan Elliott Wheeler. The Puritans moved up to 18th in National League North, 4 points clear of the relegation zone. Didcot Town returned to the bottom of Southern League Premier South after suffering a 4-0 defeat away at Merthyr Town. North Lee stretched their head to the top of Southern League Central Division with a 3-1 win at Welwyn Garden City. Kidlington drew 0-0 at home to Hadley.
Are you trying to quit drinking? Whether you drink a lot or not, you might want to cut down on your alcohol intake, but this can be difficult. To help you out, the NHS has outlined some tips for those who want to quit drinking. Cutting down on your alcohol intake has a few immediate and long-term benefits. The NHS website explains that if you drink more than 14 units of alcohol per week, these tips could help you reduce your intake. It says, 14 units is equivalent to 6 pints of average strength beer, or 6 medium glasses of wine. The NHS encourages people to make a plan so they can set a limit on how much they will drink before they start. It's also suggested that you set a budget by only taking a set amount of money out with you to buy alcohol. Let your friends and family know that you intend on cutting down on alcohol, as they could support you as you do. Reduce how much alcohol you drink each day so you're successful every day that you manage it. If you'd like to have a drink while cutting down, you can cut down the size of your drink while still enjoying yourself. You could try having a small glass of wine rather than a large, and a bottled beer instead of pints. Why not opt for a lower strength alcoholic drink? The NHS says you could swap strong alcoholic drinks with ones that are a lower strength by looking at the information on the bottle. It's important to stay hydrated, so you can have a glass of water before you drink alcohol. You can also alternate between alcoholic drinks and water or other non-alcoholic drinks. Try to have a break from alcohol by scheduling a few drink-free days every week. You can find more alcohol advice via the NHS website. The immediate effects of cutting down on your alcohol intake include feeling better in the mornings, being less tired during the day, and feeling more energetic. Long-term benefits include your mood being generally better, and you might feel more rested when you wake up in the morning. Cutting down on the alcohol you drink could help prevent your heart from further enlarging, which can be caused by long-term heavy drinking. It can't be completely reversed, but stopping drinking alcohol can prevent it from worsening.
Plans for a second solar farm outside Oxford include digging up a trouble-hit Botley Road to lay a cable. The route has been closed to traffic at the rail bridge since April, as Network Rail work on a £161 million project to upgrade the station, and work on the road is not expected to be completed until October. Now plans for a second solar farm in the area at Farmore look set to bring more disruption, as a cable needs to be laid beneath Botley Road. Energy firm Green Nation has submitted a planning application for the solar farm across 61 hectares at Farmore, called Red House Solar Farm. It will not be as big as the Photovolt Development Partners solar farm. The public are being consulted about a 1,000 hectare, 2,471 acre facility on sites near Botley, Kidlington and Woodstock, with consultation running until February the 8th. Regarding Red House Solar Farm, Green Nation said on its website, Green Nation has submitted a planning application to the Vale of Whitehorse District Council for a 49.9 megawatt solar farm and associated infrastructure on land to the west of Red House Farm, Farmore. The proposed development would create enough renewable energy to meet the annual electricity needs of approximately 9,000 homes per year, which would offset the 231,161 tonnes of CO2 each year. In addition to having solar panels on the site, the proposal would also include the biodiversity net gain and landscape enhancement features. Sheep will graze around and beneath the solar panels once operational, therefore offering dual use for the land. Green Nation is also seeking planning permission from the City Council to install an underground cable from Botley Road near Botley Bridge to connect the solar farm to the Oxford Bulk Supply Point electricity substation at Ferry Hinksey Road. And the planning design and access statement on the application has warned that laying the cable could bring disruption to residents. It says works to install the cable are short-term impact. The applicant appreciates and accepts that there will be some disruption to residents along this element of the route. The applicant continues to explore alternative options that proposed to avoid disruption to the residents and to the road network. A senior engineer for the County Council has also warned that the location of the cable work, which will require a 1.2 metre trench, could clash with a rolling programme of road resurfacing. He has requested that the solar farm company liaises with the council to avoid post-resurfacing disturbance. Julian LeVay of residents group West Oxford Access said, from 2025, companies could face fines of £2,500 a day for blocking traffic-critical roads. More than 400 people have signed a petition asking the government to financially aid businesses on Botley Road. Their calls come as Network Rail's partial closure of the route enters its second calendar year. Businesses have seen footfall and profits plummet since the road was shut at the rail bridge. Opponents of plans to reopen an immigration removal centre vowed to fight on despite a planning application being submitted to redevelop the site. Campsfield House in Kidlington could reopen later next year to house up to 400 male detainees plus 400 staff once operational. Last summer, the Ministry of Justice applied to Charwell District Council for permission to demolish temporary buildings, including a cell block, faith building and plant room. Last week, a planning application was submitted for an extension to a current changing room. Emma Jones said the coalition to keep Campsfield closed is not surprised but deeply disappointed by this latest planning application, which regards the widespread local opposition to the proposed reopening of the detention centre. Immigration detention is cruel, ineffective and costly, and Campsfield House has a notorious reputation during its 25 years of operation. In a democracy, it should be noteworthy that both the local MP Leila Moran and Oxfordshire County Council strongly opposed the reopening of Campsfield. The strength of local feeling was evident at last November's rally, which was attended by many local people. This sentiment was further demonstrated through an open letter signed by over 140 university academics and student bodies in June. Additionally, a petition against the reopening has received support from 1,139 people to date. Our fight to keep Campsfield closed continues. Campsfield House operated as an immigration removal centre for 25 years but was shut down in 2018 after years of problems, including riots and fires, hunger strikes, escapes and a suicide. In 2022, the Home Office announced that it could be redeveloped after a refurbishment costing £227 million. It said it will provide a mixture of refurbished and new build accommodation and will provide safe, secure and fit-for-purpose accommodation for people in detention. Oxford West and Abingdon MP Miss Moran has joined protesters at the site and tabled a motion in Parliament in July 2022 fighting plans to reopen the centre. The same month, Oxford City Council said the potential reopening of the centre would be inhumane. In October 2022, Green Councillor Ian Middleton tabled a motion at Oxfordshire County Council asking the councillors to ask leader Liz Leftman to write to the Home Office and urge it to ditch its plan. 27 councillors voted in favour, whilst 8 opposed it. Last November, more than 50 protesters gathered at the site calling for a halt to the reopening after the Supreme Court ruled the government's Rwanda asylum policy unlawful. The demonstration was organised by the Coalition to Keep Campsfield Closed and Oxford Student Action for Refugees. An open letter signed by over 140 academics and student bodies was published last year, calling upon the Home Office to scrap the plans. A petition to set up by a refugee who is now a carer for social services, who was detained at Campsfield House between 1993 and 2018, has 1,139 signatures. The Home Office failed to respond for a request for comment.
Bicester Town Council will be accepting applications for the 2024 to 2025 grant aid starting February the 1st. There is also money remaining from the 2023 to 2024 grant should anyone wish to apply. Applicants must submit a completed grant application form, privacy notice, up-to-date accounts, a constitution or rules set, supporting documents and a detailed report on how funds were used if money was received last year. To apply for the funds, organisations must be able to show they need the money for a specific project rather than to cover daily costs. The applications for the 24 to 25 grant close on March the 10th, while the 23 grant will close on February the 29th. Interested parties can find relevant details and forms on the Council's website.
The life expectancy for males in Oxford has increased by over a year, new figures show. Areas in southern England dominate the latest list for the highest life expectancy at birth, making up the entire top 10 for both males and females, while no areas in the south appear in the top 10 for the lowest life expectancy. Most local areas have also seen a fall in the estimated life expectancy at birth, with the reduction driven by the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. The figures have been published by the Office of National Statistics, ONS, and cover England, Wales and Northern Ireland. They show that for a baby born in 2020 and 2022, Oxford saw the largest increase in life expectancy for males over this period, up 1.4 years, just ahead of Selby in North Yorkshire and West Devon, both also 1.4 years. There was a gap of more than a decade between the local areas with the highest and lowest male life expectancy, and more than 7 years between the top and bottom areas for female life expectancy. Julia Sandborough, ONS Deputy Director of Health and Life Events, said, although life expectancy has fallen across regions, the constituent countries are as a clear geographical divide when it comes to areas with the best and worst outcomes. None of the 10 local areas with the highest life expectancy were located in the north of England, Wales or Northern Ireland. By contrast, of the 10 local areas with the lowest life expectancy, none were in the south of England. The decrease in life expectancy during 20 to 2022 has been predominantly driven by the coronavirus pandemic, which led to increased mortality in 2020 and 2021, she added. Some 238 local areas across England and Wales and Northern Ireland experienced a fall in male life expectancy at birth over the decade to 2020 to 2022, while 211 areas recorded a drop in female life expectancy. But a fall in life expectancy does not mean that a baby born between 2020 and 22 will go on to live a shorter life than one born in the earlier periods. The average lifespan of a person is determined by changes in mortality rates across their lifetime, meaning that if rates improve, life expectancy will go back, the ONS said. Vina Raleigh, senior fellow at the King's Fund charity, which works to improve health and care in England, said the data showed the yawning gap in life expectancy between some of the most and least deprived areas in England.
Oxford doctor and author Rachel Clark has co-written an ITV drama based on her experiences during the pandemic. Breathtaking, based on her book of the same title, is being screened next month. Filming of the three-part series was completed in Northern Ireland last year. The drama stars Joanne Froggatt in the role of a frontline hospital consultant and is based on Dr. Clark's unflinching personal memoir of the greatest public health crisis in living memory. The memoir has been adapted for television by Dr. Clark and former junior hospital doctors Jed Mercurio, who created Line of Duty, and Prasanna Pawanaraja. The drama has been directed by Craig Viveros, who is also known for Angela Black, The Watch and The War of the Worlds. Dr. Clark, a palliative care doctor, told The Guardian one motivation for writing Breathtaking was the amount of misinformation and spin and downright lies from the government. She added that a nurse at her trust caught COVID and died in hospital. She said, "She had the pitiful PPE of a paper mask and plastic penny. You think of that, and then you think of Matt Hancock literally going on national TV and saying there are no problems with PPE. At the time it felt grotesque, the mismatch between how brave and selfless frontline staff are being versus these lies on behalf of the government." The three-part series has been produced by Mr. Mercurio's independent production company, HTM Television. Jed Mercurio said, during filming, "Everyone at HTM Television has felt privileged to dramatise Rachel Clark's hauntingly illuminating memoir of health workers struggling to cope with the extraordinary challenges of the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm honoured to have collaborated with Rachel and Prasanna on this important drama, and thrilled to be working with a cast led by Joanne Froggatt and crew and led by director Craig Viveros. Breathtaking, in 3-hour-long episodes, recounts the devastating impact of the pandemic, through the eyes of acute medicine consultant Dr. Abby Henderson, played by Golden Globe-winning actress Joanne Froggatt, who was known in Sherwood, Downton Abbey, Angela Black and Liar. On completion of filming in May, Joanne Froggatt said, "I feel truly honoured to be playing Dr. Abby Henderson in Breathtaking, based on Dr. Rachel Clark's beautifully written, poignant and shocking book of the same name. When I first read the incredible scripts, they moved me to tears on many occasions. I felt so passionately that I had to be part of telling this story, the real story of what was really happening behind the closed doors of the hospitals during the pandemic. Our NHS staff are nothing less than absolute heroes in my eyes. I hope telling this story goes a little way towards us understanding their truth, their lived experience, and honouring their unbelievable commitment and sacrifice on behalf of us all." Breathtaking will be shown on ITV1 in February.
A world-renowned baritone and artist has collaborated with libraries at the University of Oxford for a pop-up exhibition, Mischief in the Archives, opening at the Western Library's Blackwell Hall on January 27th, seeks to challenge narratives and restore honour to those he sees as silenced in archives. Deriving from Oxford's Bodleian Library's collection, Peter Braithwaite uncovers his roots back to the British-owned Codrington Plantation in the Barbados. He has found enslaved ancestors as well as others who were slave traders, including plantation owner John Braithwaite and Margaret, and Addo Braithwaite, an enslaved couple subsequently freed. The exhibition juxtaposes items from his personal collection with the Bodleian's records, shining a light on the intersecting lives of his ancestors amid the harrowing reality of the 18th century Barbados slavery. The title, Mischief in the Archives, encapsulates different facets of this unique exhibit. Mr. Braithwaite places his family artifacts alongside researched archives from Bodleian Libraries, a creative mischief he refers to as counter-archives. This approach aims to challenge the colonial records and uncover the concealed voices within. The exhibition further incorporates a shaggy ceremonial costume symbolising trickster spirit in Caribbean folklore. Mr. Braithwaite's contemporary perspectives and personal items juxtapose the past archives, aiming to humanise the dehumanised histories whilst offering the public the chance to witness a living history that has been buried in the archives. Mr. Braithwaite said, "I always had this urge to dig. I wanted to learn more about these real people from history, from my history, and I'm heartened and unbelievably proud to have this opportunity through the Bodleian Libraries to share them with you too." Despite describing the work as painstaking, but totally worth it, Mr. Braithwaite warned that such a task must be done with care due to the visceral violence and challenging terminology of the historic papers. Coming in partnership with the Bodleian Libraries, the exhibition is part of the library's Mellon Foundation-funded research project, We Are Our History. Jasdeep Singh, project leader, said, "Peter's journey of family history shows how diving into the archives can unexpectedly intertwine past and present. By sharing this platform with Peter to engage critically with our collections, this display embodies our commitment through the We Are Our History project to learn, adapt and represent overlooked stories and experiences within our archives."
More than 800 people are expected to attend a Lunar New Year event to welcome in the Year of the Dragon. The Oxfordshire Chinese Community and Advice Centre, the OCCAC, is set to host the annual celebration on the 18th of February, promising an extensive programme of cultural experiences. The age-old festival represents the beginning of the traditional Chinese calendar, and is the most significant observance within the Chinese community. The Chinese zodiac calendric system assigns to each year a specific animal denoting distinctive character traits. The cycle's fifth animal, the dragon, is symbolic of power, nobility, honour, fortune and success. People born within a dragon year, including 2024, are said to demonstrate inherent audacity, tenacity and intellect, often marked by a spirit of enthusiasm and confidence. The community is set to enjoy an array of performances that include dragon and lion dances, acrobatics, martial arts, and a recitation on the piano and halusi, a traditional Chinese instrument. The event promises to indulge the audience with songs, dance, choir, singing, and even a chance to win prizes in the annual charity raffle draw. Before the main events commence, an acrobatic workshop featuring a solo dragon dance will keep the younger attendees engaged. This year's Lunar New Year Market offers a glimpse into traditional crafts like Chinese calligraphy, paper cutting, and wind spinner making. Attendees can also participate in the fun and capture memories in traditional Chinese costumes against a backdrop. Chair of OCCAC, Stephen Chu, said, "Lunar New Year is about friends and family members coming together. We've been running the Chinese New Year celebration since 1992, except during the pandemic at Oxford Town Hall. The event offers a valuable opportunity for other local residents to learn about Chinese culture and meet the Chinese community, adding multicultural flavour to Oxford City. We're pleased to see the keen support of the locals over the years and welcome everyone to join us again in the beautiful town hall." Discounted tickets are currently on sale at various points across Oxford. For further details regarding the event and ticketing, visit the OCCAC's website. The OCCAC provides independent quality advice and services that enable members of the Chinese community to gain equal access to public resources, improve their quality of life, and integrate into society. It also offers health and mental health talks and supports mental health clients and their carers.
Roy Peach has a reputation as one of Oxfordshire's award-winning youth workers, and is now becoming known for another talent, writing poetry. The 36-year-old from Kidlington has just published 75 poems in a book entitled Look Inside, Poems of the Heart, Soul and Mind. He embarked on the venture in an eventful period between Christmas 2022 and the New Year. He said, "With wrapping paper strewn around, family wallowing on the sofa, and not being a big TV watcher, I needed to do something to prevent my mental health collapsing. I've had experience of poor mental health, and it was itching to keep busy for 10 days until I went back to work. A Facebook advert appeared on his computer for writing Sanctuary, offering calm space, solitude, and sparks of inspiration for writing poetry and reflections with free advice on how to develop a more regular writing practice. What followed, he says, was 10 days of pure bliss being supported by fellow writers." He added, "Resettling into the writing groove after a lengthy period of pushing my writing to one side allowed me to immerse myself again in a pursuit I've always loved." He tells his readers, "I truly hope that at least one poem in the book resonates and brings you joy, happiness and healing." This isn't the first time he has written poetry. His poems Hugs and Kisses featured in an exhibition at the Victoria Gallery and Museum in London during the pandemic. His previous connection with the literary world has been varied, with short stories featuring in Writing Magazine and a short story film script and poetry in an international competitions. His debut two-act play, All at Sea, was performed at the Unicorn Theatre in Abingdon to critical acclaim in 2019, and he recently released his debut song Don't Tell Me on Spotify. The poetry book has already been acclaimed by best-selling author Beth Kempston, who said, "Roy Peach shows us that there is a poetry hovering just beneath the skin when we take the time to look inside." Mr. Peach, a qualified youth worker who runs Kennington Youth Club, follows in the footsteps of his late father Colin, who wrote poetry in his spare time.
That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, you can telephone Margaret on 07496 062280. That's 07496 062280. Please remember to leave your name and a contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspapers skill. If you need advice on this, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.